Okay, so I'm pleased to welcome you all to this conference on new perspective on global environmental images that have been organized by Sebastian Krebsmühl. He's really the key organizer, together with the help of our consortium with Chantal Pacteau here and Clotilde Péan that you met at the entrance. A few words on our organizations. We are a consortium, a scientific consortium, a research consortium on climate, environment, and society, which is called GIS, but in French, it's not Geographical Information System. This is a scientific group of members that gather, so typically a consortium, that gather to do research all together, so to support some research activities. So the translation is better consortium in English than GIS, which is a false friend. And so we have been created in 2007 with the objective to foster new interdisciplinary research on climate change. So this is really this idea of interdisciplinary, which is key. And as we advance, we also do some transdisciplinary, so working also with society. But it was not initially in our mission, but this is important to better interface with society. And so we develop network activities, we favor the emergence of collaboration, we support projects, and we support workshops like this one. Our consortium is based in Île-de-France, so Paris area, and we gather climate, economy, ecology, hydrology, health, social sciences, and humanities with about 17 laboratories, and you can find a lot more information on our website. So we have five topics. First one on global climate, energy policies, and economic development. The second one on climate extremes, analyses, and vulnerable regions. A third one, climate change, ecosystem, water resources, and land use. Maybe I have, can the translator tell me, maybe I speak too fast? Yes. Okay, so with the translation, so please, all the speakers, do not do as I was doing. So take your time. I tend to speak quite fast, even in English. So yes, we have to be careful so that the translators are able to follow. So yes, so I have to take care, sorry. So a third one on climate change, ecosystems, water resources, and land use. One on climate change impacts on health, and we had a conference last week in this same location on this issue, and adaptation to climate change. Here we are on something which is a bit more transverse on images, but probably a bit more related to the first topic, which is global issues and representations. So we have indeed, we have done a set of activities around the climate change debate and on representations of climate change. And we had a first workshop on climate change controversies in media, social insights, that was in 2010, organized with Jean-Baptiste Combi, Hélène Guimot, Stéphanie Coutte. And we also, I guess the slides should be available on our website. As each time we have an event, we put the slides on the web. And we also had another one on knowledge, beliefs, representations in understanding climate change issues. First half day in March 2013 and a full day in November 2013, organized by Chantal Pacteau, Anna Maria Lambelle, and the collaboration with Norway, Kjersti Fløtum, who is also here today. And for this one, Knowledge Beliefs, we have a document, a written document that should be issued, we hope, rapidly. It takes quite a lot of time to really do something which reflects what was said, so we hope to be able to do it soon. On the right side, Envie Globe, so we have supported one project, Envie Globe, which is to Basically, we help organize two conferences. One is this one with Sébastien, and really to expand from what he did in his PhD thesis and being able to put it in an international context. And the other one was on dissonant voices in March 2013, organized by Stéphane Aycout, Hélène Guillemot, Chantal Pacteau, which was also to extend, to put the PhD thesis of Stéphane Aycout in an international context. So we really started from those two PhD thesis to put them more largely, to give also an opportunity to put that in a larger context. And for this part one, we have a written document that should also, I hope, be issued rapidly. And for this one also, we also plan to have a written document, a bit different format. We will do talk by talk, so that the authors will check, because it's too complex to have something where we do not come back with the authors. So just to start, two images that I like, and I hope I will be able after the conference to know more how I can reposition them in the overall landscape and better understand how indeed what effect it has also on people and how we can position. For us, I'm a climate scientist, and all these activities on dissonant voices, on representations, on images is important to also work with the social sciences and help us understand when we use images, when we convey ideas, how they are better, better understand how they are perceived, how they are understood. What do we convey when we convey when we use such an image, and also how do we understand how people react to this? In particular, like this cartoon by Kanya with the bears that have become really the symbol of climate change more and more. If you type climate change images, you will see a lot of bears. Yeah, a lot of funny images. So I hope you will enjoy the conference, and I let Sébastien really get more in the topic.
Thank you very much for this introduction. And yes, a very warm welcome to everybody here. I would like to thank the Gis Klima for the support for financing this event, and also especially to Clotilde Péon, who did some hard work to get everybody here. Also Mediaya from the Centre Coiré, who helped a lot to bring everybody here from quite... I should talk louder. Yes, of course, sorry. Now, we also have Aurore Viard-Créteil here. She will do the... a sort of a summary document of all the talks that will be given here. And we will ask you obviously afterwards for your approval. And so we will, after the conference, we should have something available pretty quickly. So a more tangible reminder of this gathering, a first tangible reminder of this gathering. Now, this site, this Campus CNRS from in Meudon here, has also some historical significance regarding our conference. In the early 1920s, a huge glass house was installed on the left wing of this building, allowing for photographic and film experiments. In natural lighting, film experiments in natural lighting conditions. Today, our heritage from that time is CNRS Image, and they occupy the same space as the photo lab and host a huge image collection of scientific imagery such as this one. And this is the Meudon site from an aerial perspective. You see at the top the Seine River. And I'm showing this vertical image, aerial image, because this is a topic, as you might suspect already, that I'm particularly interested in. Many of the global images we will encounter throughout this conference stand precisely in this tradition. In the long run, what I hope might come out of this conference is a research program on environmental images in general, a research program that would embrace necessarily both practitioners from the hard sciences and researchers from the humanities and social sciences. This is, in my opinion, precisely the reason why we are all gathering for these coming 2 days, and why there are researchers from very different communities present in this room today, be it speakers on the program or persons in the audience that kindly decided to join us here for the 2 days. You will find geographers next to historians and writers, researchers from the French Space Agency next to sociologists, philosophers next to engineers, and finally art historians next to physicists, climate scientists, political scientists, and administrators. Let me quickly run you through the program, where we will see the great diversity of the topics covered during these next 2 days. So we have this introduction, and we will start our first session with icons of the environmental age. And there will be two speakers, Fanny Studaway and Silke Vetter-Schultheis, both that engage more deeply in the question of environmental history and visual culture, how these both topics can be dealt together with. And we will move over to two parts of expert graphic and visual cultures of IPCC, two parts, where we have four speakers. There we will engage more with IPCC questions, and Richard Hamblin will probably give us a more general overview, while the other three papers will be go more precisely into specific questions of IPCC visualizations. And we will finish the day today with Jim Fleming, who will be giving a talk in a first session on visual cultures of the Anthropocene, because as you will see the next day, we will have first two remote sensing sessions followed by another visual cultures of the Anthropocene. So the first two parts, remote sensing and the global environment, will be given first by confirmed research in the first section and two PhD students in the second session. And we will follow then by a second part of the visual cultures of the Anthropocene with two papers of John Tresch and Birgit Schneider. And we will finish this conference with a very important aspect, namely environmental aesthetics. We have one session dedicated to that part specifically, and we will have Nathalie Blanc and Hervé Regnon, who will be talking on these topics, to finish finally with a concluding discussion. And we will have today also some other extracurricular events, so to speak. We will be visiting, if you wish to join us, at after the conference, meaning after 17:30, we will be visiting the Meudon campus, because there were quite some important experiments that were conducted here. Electromagnet, most importantly, that we could visit. And after that, we can have some drinks just opposite the road to conclude this first day. Ask you after maybe midday, I will ask you how many would like to join us for the rest of this part of the day. Before we move now on to the first session, I would like to add very briefly some of my own ideas on the different topics. as you will see, what follows are the views of a historian of science, and it is only one of many ways we may engage with global environmental images. These thoughts have been written down in this book on the global environment, entitled La Terre vue d'en haut, L'invention de l'environnement global, that just came out. And my book is a part of a rather a new collection that is it is called Anthropocene. You have here a few books that are in this series. Just to give you an idea what is happening at the moment in France, there's a whole new collection of the first anniversary on the theme Anthropocene from different perspectives that is going on at Edition du Seuil. So this book, what I try is to show is that the perspective from space challenges in many ways common conventions, at least when we see it from a historical viewpoint. Accommodating the vertical perspective onto our planet was a long learning process that is obviously still ongoing. And in this book, I try to retrace this process from aerial photography to the emergence of global environmental icons such as the ozone hole and more recent plans to solve global environmental problems with so-called geoengineering solutions. The convergence of photography and flight, especially during the second half of the 19th century, was crucial for several interconnected developments. First of all, the aerial view proposed a fundamentally new view on the world that the inventor of aerial photography, famous balloonist Félix Tournachon, known as Nadar, he called that the planisphere. Now, this notion, this notion's proximity to cartography points precisely at what Nadar had initially in mind. Namely, not only what is written here, élevons la photographie à la hauteur de l'art, to bring it close to art, but his idea was a scientific project. A scientific project with great ambition. He wanted to use aerial photography as a means to produce a whole new map of France. That never happened for many practical reasons related to photography, but there is also one reason related to the nature of the vertical image itself. Indeed, one may observe that there was a great confusion what exactly this view on the world actually is made of and what exactly it meant. All the major conventions inherited from the central perspective, one could say also the classical panorama perspective, were violated by the vertical view on the Earth. There was neither top nor down, neither left nor right, no horizon to guide the viewer's eye, nor any clearly distinguishable elevations to easily determine the scale. Except for one knew exactly what one was photographing. For example, in this case, Gaston Tissandier, in this article, with Jacques Ducombe, here you see what a vertical perspective means, how you realize this photography, and they realized in the 1880s, this photograph from here, made here in Paris, just next to Notre Dame, and you will see that when you know what you are photographing, you can obviously draw immediately a map-like sketch. And there is also a second reason related that produced a profound ambivalence inscribed into the aerial view right from the start. This is well expressed in these quotes that you find with the early balloonists and balloonist scientists that conducted the first scientific flights. And there are some, there is always this idea of this magnificent view and how profoundly it influences, it produces something new, but it also is immediately accompanied by the idea of controlling space, mapping space, and getting control over space. So you have here, for example, which fantastic dreams could evoke itself to our contemplation. The central district of France spreads itself out beneath us as an unlimited plain, as rich in color, as varied in tint, and which I can only compare once again to a magnificently painted geographical map. So all these quotes show the fascination for the aerial perspective, an aesthetic pleasure and inspiration, which is, however, immediately accompanied by far more pragmatic ideas of mapping and controlling space. This ambivalence is, in my opinion, at the heart of first the aerial and later space views. The planisphere, if we want to continue to use Nadar's notion, proved in this respect highly successful all along the 20th century, especially a whole new science known as photogrammetry, helped promote the idea of the planisphere in many different fields, and to slowly integrate all kinds of phenomena on an increasingly larger scale, from terrestrial features to the atmosphere since the beginning of the space age. Metadata, for instance, crucial for understanding what could be seen in the image, was integrated into the imaging process very early from the start. Louis Caetet, for example, this is shown here behind me, invented already at the end of the 19th century an ingenious process to synchronize the realization of an aerial photograph with the reading of a barometer, allowing to deduce the height of the vertical shot and therefore the scale of the image. And especially after the First World War, during which aerial photography had become a crucial element in analyzing the environment, repercussions could be made out well beyond the military domain. Numerous artistic schools sought inspiration in the aerial perspective, such as Kazimir Walewicz, for his manifest on suprematism, published in the Bauhaus series. But one could also think of Neue Seen, the school Neue Seen at the Bauhaus, a photographic school developed also in the 1920s at the same time. What counts here is that the military dimension alone is not sufficient to explain the huge success of aerial and space photography during the 20th century, yet it was one of the main drivers, at least historically speaking. Aesthetic dimensions are, however, equally relevant when talking about the emergence of global environmental images, and these are issues that have to be addressed, in my opinion, from a broad perspective. Hence, the last panel on the second day of this conference on environmental aesthetics. This strong ambivalence inscribed in aerial views, aesthetic pleasure and mastery of space, on the other, is an aspect that also returns when considering the famous icons of the environmental age, especially when looking at space photography. The famous blue marble and its predecessors, examples we certainly will hear more about in the first session today, and in some papers on visual cultures of the Anthropocene or of the session on remote sensing, are in my eyes not only a success story in the creation of global environmental consciousness. In my book, I try, for example, to give a more nuanced answer by stressing, of course, the strong military heritage within the Cold War context, like the V2 rockets and the photographs, the first photograph from space. And I also stress the serendipitous circumstances of their creation. Many of these pictures were not planned, had different objectives, or had only very low priority. The V2 rocket photographs, for instance, were intended to observe the behavior of the rocket during the flight. And most of the iconic NASA pictures we all know today were never on any schedule or only had only low priority objectives. And finally, and probably most importantly, I discussed the highly problematic imaginaries and metaphors these images conjured. Think, for example, of the spaceship Earth metaphor popularized by Buckminster Fuller, the man who designed the gigantic geodesic dome that hosted this exhibit of the first Earthrise picture at the Montreal exhibition in 1967. This was, of course, by no means innocent. The dome is the archetype of a technocratic environmental thinking that made its way from the dream of colonizing outer space or all sorts of hostile environments during the Cold War to the idea that our planet is a huge, gigantic spaceship Earth or a gigantic glass house, as in this example, making some believe we could regulate the interior temperature at our own will. These are precisely the challenges we are facing in the Anthropocene. Hence the sessions on the visual cultures of the Anthropocene and visual cultures of IPCC, respectively. The trouble with images, and I would like to finish with this, and this counts specifically for scientific images, is that they may prove to be extremely powerful or very weak. Some images proved to have a huge impact and received iconic status. Others showed only hidden effects, yet other again left no legacy at all. One of our tasks during these 2 days might be to identify these multiple other dimensions and factors that help to make the difference, to identify the relevant contexts which help explain why some global images work while others don't. This is necessarily an interdisciplinary endeavor. And that is precisely the reason why I'm very happy that all of you, coming from a great diversity of disciplinary backgrounds, agreed to join us here for these 2 days. Thank you very much for your attention.